Hello and welcome to Podcast Speaking for Safety. This is a podcast where we look at issues surrounding child abuse, neglect, and youth safety. My name is Vera Piantak, and I'm your host for this show, and this is the first episode. Today, we'll be talking to the York Region Children's Aid Society. Good morning. You're listening to 102.7 CHOP FM, Pickering College's community radio station. My name is Vera Piantak. I'm a grade 12 student here at Pickering College, and this podcast is a part of my global leadership program where we are encouraged to engage with real-world issues and amplify voices that create positive change in our community. Welcome to Speaking for Safety. Speaking for Safety is a podcast dedicated to open, honest conversations about child protection, youth well-being, and community responsibility. Many of these topics are difficult to talk about, but they are also essential. By creating space for informed dialogue, this podcast aims to increase awareness, reduce stigma, and help young people and adults better understand how safety, trust, and support are built. Before we begin today's episode, I want to let listeners know that this conversation includes discussion of child abuse and neglect. Listener caution is advised. If anything discussed today brings up concerns or feels overwhelming, support resources will be shared at the end of the episode. Today, I'm joined by Kim Sylvester, Acting Director of Child, Youth, and Family Wellbeing at the York Region Children's Aid Society. York Region Children's Aid Society works to support the safety and well-being of children, youth, and the families in the community, often in moments of crisis, uncertainty, or fear. Kim brings extensive experience in child and family services, and today she'll be sharing insight into how child protection work happens, what the public often misunderstands, and how young people can play a role in keeping themselves and others safe. Thank you so much for joining me today. And to begin our conversation, I'd like to start with a broader question about your work and the role your organization plays in the community. So what does your organization focus on?
Well, good morning. Thank you for having us today, Vera. So our organization focuses on both the safety and the well-being of children and youth in York Region. So when we're doing our assessments, we are using different approaches to understand the worries that are going on in a family, how to identify what their strengths are, and how do we create opportunities for families to be able to thrive. We really want to focus on ensuring that we have equitable outcomes for the children and youth that we're serving. It's important for us to be able to build connections for mm-hmm. children and youth. So who's in their network? How do we make sure that they're being connected to safe people? And we also are looking to build strong community partnerships because we know that the work of creating safety for children and youth is not something that we can do alone. So we really rely on the work of other people in the community as well to help us ensure that we're providing culturally relevant services for those that we serve, as well as making sure that we can really connect to the proper service.
Mm-hmm. I feel like that's really helpful to hear, and especially because people only see one side of the work. They just expect your organization to help children, but you actually do much more than people might think. And understanding that foundation helps frame everything else we're going to talk about today. Your staff often works in very emotional and high pressure situations. So I wanted to explore how they're prepared for that. And how do you train your staff to deal with difficult emotional situations?
Yeah, so our workers are really dedicated professionals. They have extensive training and experience in working with families and individuals and children and working with other people in the community. So our staff most typically have either a college or university degree. So they might work in social work or child, youth, and family work. So we really want to make sure that we train up our staff so that they can be prepared to deal with those difficult situations. We have an internal peer support team. So those staff are specifically trained to be able to provide supports to our staff in difficult situations. We provide formal supports. So we have what we call the Employee and Family Assistance Program. So that's part of our benefits package. So that way staff can access, trauma counseling or other supports that they might need. We also have wellness programs throughout the month. So we have lunch and learns on various topics. So things like vicarious trauma and compassion fatigue. So being able to support staff to understand when they're maybe being triggered and what supports do they need to get themselves so that they can provide mm-hmm. the best support to families. We also are connected to our provincial association, which is OACAS, the Ontario Association of Children's Aid Societies. Mm. So they provide a lot of different training that we can provide to our staff. And then, of course, our staff also have direct supervision with their supervisors. So there's constant check-ins to make sure that staff are taking care of themselves, because mm-hmm. We know that you can't take care of other people if you're not taking care of yourself.
Wow. There is a lot of preparation that goes into that. And it's really important for the staff to feel okay so they could take care of other people.
Exactly.
Yeah. And there's often a lot of public discussion, and sometimes there's criticism around child protection agencies. With that in mind, what is something that the public often misunderstands about organizations like yours?
Yeah, I think that there's often, when our agency is in the news, sometimes it's not always the most positive. Mm-hmm. So it's really great that we have opportunities like this to be able to shine a light on what the work that we're doing. One of the kind of beliefs is that we're quick to remove children from their families. And that's a really big myth. In over 97% of the cases that we're working on, children are remaining with their families. And actually only 1% of children that we are servicing are actually in foster care. So the majority of the work that we're doing is working with children while they're with their families. Mm-hmm. Our main goal is to work with the family to be able to safely care for their children kind of in their home. And if they can't remain with their parents, then we are looking within their circle of support. So if they can't stay with parents right now, is there an auntie, an uncle, mm-hmm. somebody within their faith community? So really looking at different people who might be able to provide care for them. So our number one goal is to be transparent, to collaborate mm-hmm. with families, and again, to provide connections to people, to the community.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of people really need to hear that it's actually not true that what they think. And misunderstandings can also affect how people define harm in everyday life. So I want to talk about that a little more clearly. What do most people consider normal, but it's actually abuse?
So abuse and neglect isn't necessarily one specific event. It's often kind of a pattern of behavior. So that could include shaming or intimidation or neglectful practice that can really harm a child's emotional functioning or even their safety or well-being. Can have an impact. Mm-hmm. One area that I find is a bit of a surprise for people is the number of calls that we actually receive about children who are witnessing intimate partner violence or violence kind of within the home. So we view this as a form of emotional abuse. So we know that exposure to violence can have an impact on a young child's brain development, and it can really increase challenging behaviors. And as they get older, it could lead to concerns for drug or alcohol abuse or involvement with the youth justice system. So we really do try to work with families to help them understand the impact of that violence. Mm-hmm. In witnessing that violence in the home. And so then we are able to provide an intervention that will hopefully decrease that, so then children kind of aren't going to be as impacted.
Mm-hmm. And I think that a lot of people don't question those behaviors because they've seen them for so long. For example, they've been growing up with it and they just don't consider it as abuse or neglect. And prevention is especially important when we think about young people and the role they play in their communities. What are small actions that teenagers can do to help prevent child abuse in their communities?
It's really important that youth have a connection to a trusted adult. So we want to make sure that if children or youth have any concerns about themselves or about their friends, that they can tell that trusted adult or someone kind of in their community that they feel safe with. It's important that youth stand up to anything that they're witnessing that's unsafe. So mm-hmm. it may not be safe for them to say something in the moment, but after telling again a trusted adult. Also, what we try to do is teach our youth about what healthy relationships look like. So that way they can identify what a healthy relationship mm-hmm. is. And then they can also identify what a unhealthy relationship is to be able to report that if they're seeing a concern. There's also resources available. 310 COPE is a phone number that people can call here in York Region if they've got a concern, either for themselves or for others. Mm-hmm. And then always Kids Help Phone is another place where kids can call if they've got any concerns. I think it's really important that we normalize conversations with youth about these types of concerns, so that way they feel comfortable in being able to share their experiences and then possibly seek support, so that it doesn't become kind of a stigma.
Mm-hmm. And talking about trusted adults, in communities and especially in schools, I feel like it's really important because teenagers, they underestimate how much impact they have. And for example, in Pickering College here, we have Miss Sugar, who is a trusted adult who you can come and talk to about anything and she can help. So I feel like it's really important to actually have someone. It's one of the most important things because you can tell them anything and seek for help if you need so. And along with prevention comes awareness, and especially when it comes to friendships and peer relationships. What are small signs that teenagers should look for in their peers that may indicate that they need support?
Yeah, so I think number one, it's also really important that youth don't sort of think that they have to deal with this alone, that there is lots of support kind of out there. So again, if you've got kind of internal resources here at the college, it's great that people know kind of who they can go and speak to be able to connect them to the right supports. But you know, I think in everyday life, youth can certainly look for changes in sort of typical behavior of their peers. So is somebody who's, you know, usually outgoing, kind of out there all the time, all of a sudden is becoming withdrawn, doesn't want to hang out with friends, that could be a sign. So all of these are could be, doesn't necessarily mean that there's something going on, but it's, you know, a bit of a flag. So maybe all of a sudden they're not attending school where they had been coming to school really regularly. There's no explanation why they're not attending. We might see youth who are getting involved in some criminal activities or in destructive behavior. Might see small or sudden changes. So maybe a little bit jumpy at a physical touch or feeling a bit paranoid. Again, sort of being withdrawn from their friends or from maybe their family, or maybe they were into sports and now all of a sudden we're seeing a sort of a real change in interest in that kind of activity. Physical injuries might be present, but they might also not be something that people are seeing. So it's really important to provide social and emotional supports as well to teens who are noticing kind of signs or reporting support, you know, concerns for their friends. So it can be really hard to step out and want to, again, talk to that trusted adult about something that you're seeing with your friends. So we think it's also really important that that those youth are also having access to supports as they're making kind of those reports about their concerns. And then again, it's really important that we highlight that it's a, like, we need to create a safe space for our youth so that way they don't feel like, you know, if they are reporting something that it becomes a negative experience.
And especially in a school environment, because I'm always surrounded by people, we're always communicating, and it's really, because we see each other every day, it's really noticeable to see something when a person's acting wrong, quote unquote. So it's really important to notice that, and those tiny points, tiny notes that you take, they can actually pile up and they might lead to something bigger. And I feel like it's important to look out for your friends and actually step up, but it's hard at the same time.
Yeah, you're worried that they might get upset. And I think, again, you know, sometimes it's just about checking in. How are you doing? Is something going on? I'm really worried about you. I'd like to tell somebody about it. Can we go together and talk to somebody about it?
Yeah, I feel like that's a really nice way of doing it. And for many families and young people, fear can be a major barrier for reaching out for help in the first place. How do you build trust with children and families that are scared of contacting an organization like yours?
Yeah, I think it is really hard. Again, sort of being able to share the work that we do, I think, is one step for us to be able to build trust. So talking about the work that we're doing, dispelling some of the myths. So again, kind of talking with you today is one way for us to be able to share what we're doing, how we're supporting children and youth and families. You know, it's important for us to start from a place of, you know, respect, being transparent about what our role is, what our mandate is, but also, you know, how we can help and support families, making people aware that we are very much a confidential service. So, you know, information can't be shared kind of widely, that we really value equity and making sure that our service meets the needs of each kind of individual family and child. So we're certainly working with community partners as well. An important part of our work is making sure that the public understands the work that we're doing, especially for maybe people who are coming new to the country. So we'll work with, you know, welcome centers or newcomer agencies. So that way people who maybe not be familiar with the child welfare system here in Canada, we're sharing that information right from the beginning around how we can help to support families. We also are building personal relationships with children and families, so that way we can show them that we're listening to their experience. We're not just taking kind of a one-size-fits-all yeah. approach, right? We're making sure that, you know, whatever support that we're providing to the family is really designed just for that particular need.
And I feel like trust seems like a huge part of this work, and it's really hard yes. to gain that trust as well, especially in the beginning of communicating with people. And as you already mentioned, support isn't one size fits all, and especially when you're working with children at different stages of development, how do you design programs for different age groups, and how different are they?
Yeah, so we are an agency kind of working here in York Region, but we are mandated by provincial legislation. So mm-hmm. it's something that kind of the Ontario government sets. So some of our programs are set kind of by the provincial government and are just a part of our regular kind of legislation. But then we also are wanting to make sure that, you know, equity and cultural practices are also a part of our assessment and our support process. So we involve families and youth in kind of any programming that we're doing for them. So we might use age-appropriate materials. We ensure that language, you know, is the focus. So if somebody where English isn't their first language, we're making sure that we've got, you know, translation mm-hmm. services. So that way supports are tailored to kind of the family. We're also working alongside a lot of our community partners to ensure that our programming matches kind of the needs of the families in York Region. So some examples, we work pretty closely with 360 Kids, which is a youth agency here in York Region. We also work with Yellow Brick House, sort of for families who are experiencing intimate partner violence, mm-hmm. York Hills, which is a mental health agency here. So we do work and be able to sort of provide joint programming to make sure that, you know, services again are really tailored to each kind of child or youth. We're also collecting a lot of data about who we're servicing. So that way we can make sure that our programming really kind of tailors who we're actually servicing. So one example is we know that a lot of the children and youth that are in our care system are over the age of 13. So then we're really focused on how do we provide supports more for the older kind of youth based on that sort of data that we know about.
Mm-hmm. And I feel like it's really important that you have the connection between those organizations, because you have experience from all of the and points of view from all of the organizations, and I feel like it really highlights why one approach would not fit for everyone and would not work for everyone. And as young people spend more time online, new risks have emerged that didn't exist before. How has child abuse changed in the digital age, and especially with social media and online spaces?
Yeah, I think it's become a really complex kind of issue. One area where we're seeing an increase in is in internet exploitation and child sex trafficking. So we've seen a significant increase of that here in York Region. So we're actually working with the York Regional Police. We have a partnership with them. So that way we can ensure that, so they have a specialized unit within the York Regional Police, the Counter Exploitation Unit. And so we work with them to make sure that our staff have proper training so that they know how to identify these concerns. Wow. And then we can sort of work together with the police to make sure that, you know, any intervention or any supports are sort of really tailored to the concerns. But yeah, it's been an area that's been, you know, we've seen really quite an increase even just in the last year.
It's developing really quickly, and not even only social media, like it's everywhere.
Yeah.
People just do whatever they want, honestly, and it's really sad to see. We've already kind of talked about myths, but there are also long-standing myths that shape how society talks about abuse and who we believe. Are there certain myths about child abuse that actually make it harder for victims to come forward?
Yeah, I think that often victims might feel like they're not going to be believed and so are worried about coming forward. I think, you know, often children and youth or even families are worried about what's going to happen if they do make that call or if they do make that report. Again, kind of going back to that original myth that, you know, that we are removing children from their families. So they might worry that that's going to be the outcome. Yeah. But again, really cannot stress enough that the majority of our work is with children kind of within their families to try and and create safety, make a change so that families can kind of meet their potential. Mm-hmm. So I think that is one of the, you know, significant challenges that we're experiencing. I think people are also really wary of authority, especially if you're newer to Canada. So you might come from a country where, you know, authority is really significant and can have a lot of power. And so, again, we're really working hard to try and help people understand, you know, what is our mandate? What are we required to do? But how do we work collaboratively with families to create safety?
Mm-hmm. And I feel like education is a really big part of it, because it really shows why it's important for children and adults to know what's normal and what's not. For example, if people are coming from different countries, and if something that they're doing is considered normal in their countries, but when they come here or they move to a different country, it's not normal and it actually counts as abuse, and then people start noticing it. And then it's just important to educate others to tell the difference.
Yeah, education and awareness is a really big part of the work that we're trying to do.
Mm-hmm. And for some survivors, understanding their experiences doesn't happen right away. Why do some children not realize that they're being abused until much later in life?
Yeah, I think sometimes children won't necessarily realize something was happening until maybe they have a change in environment. So they're maybe having a bit of a different perspective after they've kind of left an abusive environment. So maybe seeing something from a different perspective, maybe realizing that now that they're out of it, that their living situation perhaps wasn't the norm. They might receive some information or education, or maybe they're in therapy now. Mm-hmm. And as they're working through something with a therapist, they're realizing what they had experienced was abuse or neglect.
Mm-hmm. It kind of explains why it can take so long for people to speak about their experiences, because it's really hard for some people especially.
Yeah.
And even when children do recognize that something is wrong, speaking up doesn't always lead to support. And what happens when a child wants to help, but the adults around them don't believe them?
Yeah, so our legislation really centers the voice of children and youth. That's our sort of our touch point. We mm-hmm. need to make sure that we're listening to youth. And so we really believe it's important to listen to children, understand their experiences. And so that's where we're going to start from, is that, you know, there's no reason to believe that a child or youth is lying about their experiences. So we're first going to make sure that, you know, we're hearing what they have mm-hmm. to say. So if an adult is speaking to a youth that's making a disclosure of something that they've experienced, but they're not sure if it's the truth, then again, it's really important to call us. So what we can do is, you know, gather more information, do proper assessments. Mm-hmm. But number one, you know, we shouldn't be assuming that children or youth are not telling the truth. And so again, that's why we're here, to be able to provide that support to anyone who's calling in, who might have kind of questions or want to consult. We can kind of walk through a situation with mm-hmm. people.
It really kind of shows how powerful adult reactions are, because they might just not believe the children, which is
yes.
sad.
It's also really important that adults don't tell children or youth or make any promises that they're going to keep their secret, because
yeah.
that can often be a situation where children or youth will say, you know, I want to tell you something, but you have to promise not to tell anyone. And so we can really break a child's trust if we say that we're not going to tell anybody mm-hmm. and then we do. We also shouldn't ever give children kind of the sort of message that everything is going to be okay, because mm-hmm. sometimes it's not going to be okay
yeah.
in the short term. Maybe in the long term it will be. So more like messages, I'm here to support you. You know, we'll work through this together, mm-hmm. Versus sort of making commitments that we can't make.
Mm-hmm. That's really important to reassure them and make sure that they're feeling supported and that yeah. they are supported. This kind of work can take a real emotional toll on the people doing it. What keeps you and your team motivated when the work becomes emotionally heavy?
Yeah, this work can be really hard. I've been doing it for over 20 years.
Oh,
and
wow.
So when I think about sort of my time at our agency and sort of why I know our staff continue, is that despite it being really challenging work, we know that we're making a difference in the lives of children and youth and families. So a lot of our staff are social workers. They went into this profession with the purpose of helping people. And so I do think that they are really focused on how are they making a difference? How are they supporting families to kind of meet their potential? Mm-hmm. Certainly this work is very challenging. There's no question about it. It demands a lot of our time. It can, as we talked about earlier, have an emotional impact on our staff. But again, I think that when you sort of look at it as a whole and what's sort of the impact that you're having on families, that kind of outweighs the negatives.
Mm-hmm. It's inspiring to hear, honestly. And looking at the bigger picture, what progress have you seen in public awareness over the years?
Yeah, I think I've seen quite a significant shift. Like I said, I've been in the field for over 20 years. And so in that time, I think I've seen a real move to all of us as CASs, helping the public to understand again that we are here to provide support, to help families, that our, you know, our goal is to keep families intact and together. So I've really seen us, as well as kind of all the CASs across the province, to share that message. That we're here to provide prevention and mm-hmm. early intervention services. So before a family hits kind of a full crisis, we're here to try and kind of intervene early so that it doesn't become that really mm-hmm. significant crisis. And we're really just here because we want to make sure that children are safe, that they're thriving, that their well-being is sort of our paramount kind of concern. We've also worked really closely with our youth advisory council. So a few years ago, we initiated a youth advisory council where we have youth who have been involved in our system, who are helping to kind of consult for us on kind of, you know, all yeah. sorts of things that we're sort of doing at the agency. And so again, that really helps us to center the voice of our children and youth, and sort of doing everything that we're doing internally as well as kind of any of our community outreach.
Mm-hmm. And I feel like throughout the years, people have spread so much more awareness about it. And even if it feels that spreading awareness is a little thing, it might actually change a lot of people's minds. And it's encouraging to hear and to listen about it. And for listeners who want to help but may not be able to volunteer or donate, how can people support your organization if they aren't able to volunteer or donate?
Sure. Well, we definitely do need volunteers and foster parents. We currently have a dedicated campaign to help recruit volunteer drivers, as well as we do have an upcoming foster care information session. We do ongoing foster care information sessions for people who might be interested. Our next one's actually this week, January 22nd at 7 p.m. But if people can't make that commitment, because it is a significant one, they could do something as simple as following our social media pages. So we do have an Instagram handle, which is at York Region Children's Aid Society. And again, sort of helping to spread the work about what we're doing, encouraging people within their own network to get involved. Mm-hmm. We also have a fundraising arm called the York Region Children's Fund. So you can donate through that fund, and 100% of the proceeds there go to directly to the children, youth, and families. And I can speak kind of directly. I've seen the impact that fundraising can have on supporting our children and youth. So definitely lots of ways to get involved. And again, just be aware of what our organization's doing and help us, again, spread that word.
Mm-hmm. And spreading awareness, people just forget how powerful that might be. I feel like it's really important. And finally, for young people listening right now who may be unsure about their own situation, where can teenagers go for help if they're unsure whether a situation counts as abuse or neglect?
Absolutely. So we do have a website, which is www.yorkcas, mm-hmm. so yorkcas.org. Or there, again, our Ontario Association, which is oacas.org. You can call us anytime to consult, so you don't need to share direct information. It can be a non-identifying, mm-hmm. you know, anonymous consult if you have concerns about yourself or somebody else that you know about. Mm-hmm. We're available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and we have a local line, which is 905-895-2318, and a toll-free line, which is 1-800-718-3850, and you can find those phone numbers on our website or at our again, our social media pages. Okay.
That's perfect. Thank you so much. And it's really important for young people to hear and to know that they have someone to talk to or just someone to help them. Okay, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me today and for sharing your experience, insight, and dedication to child, youth, and family well-being. It was a really nice time, and it gave me a lot of information, and I'm excited for listeners and for children in our school and teachers and staff members to listen to this and be more informed. Conversations like this are not always easy, but they are incredibly important. And if you are a young person listening and you're unsure about your own situation or worried about a friend, it's important to know that help is available and that your concerns matter. If you ever feel unsafe or unsure, you can reach out to a trusted adult, a school counselor, or a local child protection agency for guidance and support. Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to Speaking for Safety on 102.7 CHOP FM. My name is Vera Piontek, and this podcast was created as part of my global leadership program here at Pickering College. Take care of yourselves, and remember, speaking up can be the first step towards safety. Thank you for listening to Speaking for Safety. I'm your host, Vera Piontak. A big thank you to the York Region Children's Aid Society for joining us today. This is such an important topic for people to listen to because awareness can lead to prevention, and this episode is just one part of a bigger project focusing on protecting children and keeping communities safe.